Good evening and welcome to Thinking Out Loud on KBIA. I'm Darren Helwedge. Tonight's program is being recorded live before an audience at the Sager Broadus Gallery on Walnut in Columbia. We are going to be talking with Hannah Reeves about the gallery's Cuban Contemporary exhibit, about the artwork that Hannah and others encountered while traveling to Cuba to curate this exhibit. And we want to, first of all, welcome our guests who are here this evening. It's wonderful to have a few dozen people here, and we welcome them very much, and welcome our guest, Hannah Reeves.
Thank you. Thanks.
Hannah, you and I have been talking, people have heard us on KBIA for a few weeks now in short verse about this, but now that we've got a little bit more time, the first thing I want to hear is about how this exhibit happened. There has been, of course, an evolving dynamic political relationship between Cuba and the United States for many years. Even now, with things thawing a bit, travel to the nation is a little bit unusual. Mm-hmm. But from an artistic standpoint, wow, what an opportunity.
Right. You know, we knew that Cuba had been the country had been pretty isolated. Trade and travel embargoes had been in place for decades. They were mostly lifted in the case of the U.S. between 2014-2016. And when we became aware of that, through, you know, being in touch with some artists and some scholarly exchange that was possible even during the embargo, we were aware of some of the contemporary art that was happening in Cuba. And something that was always really remarkable to me was that I think we kind of pictured, without meaning to, we pictured Cuba as like a time capsule. You know, you think of the old cars,
right?
And you have these images and kind of absent people and absent like conversation with actual people. There was kind of this automatic tendency to think of it as, you know, encapsulated or maybe stuck in the past. And that just couldn't be farther from the truth. You know, the living, breathing people are making artwork and they're individuals who are thinking about very contemporary ideas, which, you know, in some ways, duh, but we
right.
had, but you know, we had to meet and start talking with individuals in order to fully have a sense of that. And when we did, we thought, this is so remarkable. It's been, because it has been isolated, there is kind of a self-reference, like a cultural self-reference that is different than anywhere else in the world. There's work that is fully contemporary, but that is completely unique in the entire world. And at that point, it's not widely viewed, certainly not widely purchased yet. And at the time that we went, we just wanted to be at the front edge of that. We could officially go as business people and do business and conduct, you know, fair trade exchange with the individual artist. And we wanted to be among the first. Little did we know that the window would actually close. And so we would be among the only business people who actually went and acquired works, especially in an entire exhibit's worth like this.
And how large was the group that got to go?
There were, let's see, five of us, and then Joe Staley from the Department of Art also went with us. Yeah.
Oh, magnificent. And we want to talk about the art, and obviously the main purpose of the trip was to curate art for this exhibit. But as you got to travel, you met with the people there. You got to meet with the artists. You got to spend some time in galleries. And I wanted to ask about that, because obviously art in the United States, art in Europe, there are exchanges, there are different influences. We've all studied the masters and what we call the masters, I guess. And in Cuba, it has been isolated. And so there's got to be a very Cuban sense of the artwork, and I'm sure a great pride in that from the people there.
Well, I mean, one thing that is worth kind of pointing out about the experience that it relates to that, maybe doesn't directly answer that, but is that we were meeting with individuals who weren't represented commercially in the same way as artists would be here. So that is one thing that was sort of categorically different there. You know, when you see work in a museum or in a gallery, there's the filter of a curator anywhere in the world. And when we were there, we were being the filter. And so we wanted to be very conscious and aware of what we were choosing. We wanted to choose a cross-section and represent the diversity of what we saw from individual voices. But really, our art tour of Havana was very behind the scenes. So we were not actually in those highly curated environments of galleries or museums at all.
You weren't managed.
We were in, like, on the front lines. We were in people's studios meeting with individual artists. And we were making decisions on the spot about what would ultimately fill this space. So with our floor plan in mind and our budget in mind, and an overarching idea that, that we did not want to misrepresent this huge variety that we saw by acting like there's some like overarching idea that makes something look Cuban. Because like art anywhere and everywhere, individual artists treat their subject matter and their media individually.
And it's like any other place in that there's going to be a lot of variety of backgrounds. There's going to be people that have come from very rural backgrounds, people that have been in the city and have that more urban setting, people that are more educated or less educated. And, how did you get to beyond just, like you said, the curated art in the main museum in Havana? It would be very easy to say, we're going to get the best artists and you're going to get these five or six people that everybody's heard of there. Mm-hmm. Breaking out of that, that had to be a challenge.
We were very, very lucky and privileged to work with a young gallerist and curator in Havana. She is a family friend of one of the artists in this exhibit. So Santiago Olazabal is someone whom we knew before we traveled. He has actually been to Missouri, and I hosted him at the University of Missouri when I was there, and I just personally love him. He's just, he's amazing. He was an important connection. A family friend of his is a gallerist in Havana. She's very young and incredibly smart, just very, very sharp, attuned person. So, of course, she is aware of those major, like, more established voices, of which Santiago is actually one, and Manuel Mendive, very, very internationally established, very well-known older artist. But she also really had her finger on the pulse of emerging arts, and she was discovering some of the young artists who really, some of whom had not actually exhibited their work at all, who were just making these immense, incredible bodies of work, and it was not out in the world yet. She was discovering those youngest people, too. And so she pre-selected for us, she really is a co-curator of the exhibit, pre-selected all of the artists, dozens of artists whose studios we visited, and then we selected the works and the artists that we brought back.
It's Thinking Out Loud on KBIA. We are recording this program before a live audience at Sager Broadus Gallery. Their website is sagerbroadusgallery.com, and it is on Walnut Street in downtown Columbia, and a beautiful space if you get the opportunity just for the next few days to see the Cuban Contemporary exhibit, but there are always interesting things happening here. I want to hear about the meetings. You go into, I assume, a small gallery space, or I'm sure in a lot of cases just the home of an artist. Mm-hmm. And for an artist who has done their work prior to the melting somewhat of relations, in thawing of relations, that's still got to be, hi, I'm from the United States. We want to put your artwork up in Columbia, Missouri. That had to be a conversation a lot of these artists probably never thought they'd have.
You know, we never felt like foreigners when we were in Havana. I mean, it was really remarkable. And in some ways, it was unlike any foreign country that I've ever been to, because we were foreigners, you know, and we had Joe Staley was translating for us. And I was like Tarzan, you know, trying to speak Spanish as best I could. But, you know, so we were outsiders, but we were not treated as such. We were so warmly welcomed literally everywhere we went. I mean, just without exception. And people's studios, artist studios there, or like artist studios here, you kind of had to reflect on that to realize, but you know, my studio was in a warehouse, and then once it was on my sun porch, and now it's in my attic. And we pretty much saw the gamut of that when we were in Havana as well. We were in people's homes. A couple of kind of warehousey, you know, like you pictured, sure. Converted, like commercial, I guess not commercial there, but you know, storefront type spaces,
space.
Yeah, just the full gamut, mostly in people's homes. We were so warmly welcomed by everyone whom we visited.
Talk about kind of the nuts and bolts of acquiring some of this art, because it can't have been easy. We're talking about a plane ride, a fairly limited time to go through an awful lot of art, and saying, okay, we want the Olathabal piece that we're looking at right here and saying, okay, we're going to get it on an airplane, that whole process.
Yeah, that was, it was really challenging. I mean, it was fun. It was a lot of problem solving on the spot. But, you know, like I mentioned earlier, we were thinking about our wall space here. We were sort of selecting as we went. We did 4 days of back-to-back studio visits, just long days. And throughout the process, knowing that we probably would not be able to go back through, there just wouldn't be time. So really probably visiting each person once and having to think about, okay, what have we already seen? What is coming up just based on the few images that we've seen? What do we need to save room for in the budget or in the actual room here? And making those decisions on the spot. And also, you know, for a small business, the acquisition of an entire body of work, like purchasing this work, is not a small move. Yeah. Traditionally, for us and like for most sales galleries, we consign work. So from American artists and artists from other countries even, we're borrowing it. We insure it. If we sell it, we get a cut and they get a cut. And that's kind of how these things run. That type of contracting is not possible between the U.S. and Cuba. So we went with a budget and actually acquired every piece of work. So they are permanent collection pieces now. Many of them are going home with new owners, which we're immensely pleased about. And the pieces that don't go home at the end of this exhibit go into our storage and remain available. We can pull them out. They may go on loan to museums, and we have some prerogative about that because of the ownership. But really, that was... that was a constraint and a challenge.
I hesitate to ask this question because there are so many different ways we can go with this, and we could take several hours and talk about every artist that's in here. But talk a little bit about some of the artists whose work we're looking at here, because as you mentioned, there are some people that were older and more established, but you really did kind of consciously, affirmatively go after younger artists and maybe some people that weren't as well known.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would love to talk about Michael Sotomayor, and those of you here or who have even visited the show already have undoubtedly noticed his work. We have more of his work than any other artist in the show except Santiago Lazabal. We have 9 of Michael's pieces. And he's a very, very young artist. He had just been discovered by Elisa, who is the curator that we worked with. I believe, if I understand correctly, that he has just had his first solo show at her gallery in Havana, which is a very kind of cutting edge, like kind of the avant-garde of the smaller galleries in Havana. So very early career. And he is someone who grew up in the countryside and is right in the middle of Havana now, and experiences a nostalgia for the place that he remembers. And he makes his landscapes, especially the blue landscapes that have been so noticeable, yes, and kind of moving, I think, to a Missouri audience, they're entirely from memory. He doesn't work from photographs. He doesn't work in plein air. He specifically wants to kind of have the fuzziness of the memory, and he speaks very eloquently about that. And it's moving, and that's something that we can identify with. I see that with the work of Missouri artists here in the gallery all the time. I see Missouri viewers come to Missouri-made landscapes and fall in love with them and connect with them because there is a sense of nostalgia and familiarity there. And remarkably, I think that Missourians are feeling a similar connection to Michael Sotomayor's landscapes, even though it's a different landscape. But I think you can sense and kind of feel there's kind of this tenderness, this gentleness with which he treats that nostalgia that is quite beautiful. And his studio was in his upstairs. We went into his house, and his little tiny girl was coloring on the wall when we went in downstairs, and she's like drawing, and he was like, Michael was like a little bit embarrassed, but you could tell he was kind of like, well, I can't deal with that right now, so just... Okay, we kind of like walked past her, and she's like, you know, hi. She's drawing on the wall. And we went up to the upstairs of his house where his studio was just filled, just floor to ceiling with beautiful paintings. It was incredibly hard to decide. But, you know, the blue landscapes were moving to all of us. And they're also on handmade paper, which that is neat to me.
Hey, wow.
That actually connects with an idea that was brought up to me years ago when I was at MU and was involved with an international symposium called Cultural Bricolage. That was about Cuban art and culture. And it was specifically about the idea that of using what is available to you and reusing and kind of gathering what is near. There's a sense of reusing materials that can be collage or bookmaking or papermaking or a variety of media. And so the fact that he is gathering used pieces of paper and pulping them and recycling them to make his own paper, it kind of connects him to his place, and it connects to that idea of like resourcefulness and ingenuity that was the topic of this international symposium years ago, and that was interesting to me about those pieces in particular.
Wherever somebody is in the world, a person who loves art, and there had to have been curiosity from the Cuban artists about what curating a gallery here in the United States was like. What kind of questions were they asking you and the rest of your group?
You know, I actually didn't encounter much hesitation. You know, I have to think about that. There was not a lot of questioning. There was
really?
there was a pretty universal sense of acceptance, and a lot of the artists had exhibited pretty widely and internationally, and so maybe they were familiar. The youngest artist, about half of the artists in the show are on Facebook, and so they are just like watching what we're doing, and they're sharing. Every time we post about the exhibit, I see it get shared out like 5 times. All of the artists that are on Facebook, and we're messaging with them. All of our statements have gone through many of them, and certainly through Elisa, so that we're in contact in a way that maybe is not typical when you're for like a secondary market type situation.
Sure.
It's a little bit atypical in that way, and closer to like our representation situation with American artists, where we're staying in contact as much as possible. But
particularly since you had Professor Staley with you, I wonder if you had the opportunity to visit with the artists at all about what art education is like in Cuba. What type of formal training had these artists had? What type of art training did a typical fourth grader, to pick a number, in school in Cuba learn about art?
We did get to talk a little bit about that. And specifically, we visited the most with Santiago Lazabal, and we were at his home. Joe Staley was actually staying with him. He's a longtime friend of like several Missourians. Basically, all the Missourians that he met when he was in Missouri are like his friends now, because he's that kind of person. But he really was one of our hosts, and we got to visit a lot with him. And he also talks about his educational experience in a documentary that was made by Columbia documentarian Juana Maria Coronas Cook. Did a documentary on Santiago as well that kind of touches on that topic. So I can speak to his experience the most, but I know it's echoed by some of the other artists. There is a national academy or national university of art in Havana. And my understanding is that the art education is very classical. And so there is a lot of working from the figure and a real emphasis on skill, on technical skill. That is different than my experience. I went to University of Missouri, and I had to do some skill building. I mean, I hope that we all do. But there was, from the beginning, there was more an emphasis on a postmodern conceptualism and, like, what is the idea? And then, like, choose the media that serve your idea the best. And so that actually de-emphasizes skill building in one particular media area a little bit. And that's not atypical in U.S. like higher art education, I think. And so my understanding is that this program is very strict and very classical, and that you do emerge with a very, very thorough understanding of the figure and draftsmanship. And Santiago talked about getting kicked out of art school because he said he wasn't disciplined enough. And then he like kind of got it together and went back after a year and made it through. But the artists that are in the exhibit, about half went through that National Academy, do show this facility with the figure that is pretty noticeable. But then it's interesting to me when they kind of twist that and use it to a conceptual end, because there are some classical looking depictions of the figure in this show, but there's also use of the figure to communicate something else. And that's a little bit of a, maybe not a subversion might be too strong a word, but it's like a reuse of that technical skill that's kind of interesting.
It's Thinking Out Loud on KBIA. I'm Darren Helwedge. Our program this week was recorded live at the Sager Broadus Gallery here in Columbia. We have a live audience with us here, and we are talking about the gallery's recent Cuban Contemporary exhibit. Hannah Reeves is our guest. Hannah, you've obviously had a chance to talk with patrons as they've come through over the weeks that the exhibit has been up. Talk about the reaction you've received.
It's been really wonderful to bring this show to the public. We worked on it for over a year, and we don't usually get to spend so much time with the physical artwork in person before we present it to the public. And really, in a typical exhibit for us, we're working with five contemporary artists in most of the exhibits. We are choosing the artist, but the artists are choosing the body of work. So we actually, our voice is a little bit weaker, I guess, overall in a typical exhibit. And here we really have selected every single piece. So we know what those pieces mean to us, and we've spent time with them, and we know that we connect really strongly with them. And actually, among the five of us, or the six of us with Joe Staley in the mix, we each actually are impacted more strongly by different pieces, and so the different voices are, there's kind of an overarching curatorial voice of the gallery, but our different voices are represented. We know what those things mean to us, but there was a little bit of, well, at least for me, I can speak for myself, there's a little anxiety about bringing that to the public, and how are other people going to connect with the pieces? Is this too particular a subject? Is it too particular to us? And it's been incredibly encouraging and really just amazing to see the reactions, and actually to watch different people connect with different pieces. Everybody has a different favorite piece in the show. Everyone has an artist that that really kind of strikes them in the heart, you know, and connects with some pieces more than others. And I think it feels successful in its diversity and the opportunity for multiple people to connect at different points throughout the show.
Historically, and even in the world as it exists today, and it sounds like maybe even more so in the future, the opportunity we are talking about for somebody that does want to invest in some art for their home, this is a really unusual opportunity. And talk about how that works for somebody that maybe is interested, if it's somebody that's here tonight or somebody that's listening and is interested in possibly acquiring some of this art.
Well, I mean, that is a big part of what we do. That's how we stay in business. And while we are a little bit different than the typical sales gallery that may be more like just a shop that's completely sales-oriented, we are pretty rooted in the community. We do a lot of educational programming. We do want to create a museum experience. So I would say about half of the project is creating just a viewing experience for anyone and everyone to take in. But about half of the project is making sure that some of the work goes home with people who want it and love it. And that is what keeps us in business. So all of the works in the show are for sale. Many of them have sold, which is, we're very pleased that they're going to new homes. This work is unique in being fully contemporary work by artists who are currently living and working in Havana. So not expat artists. There definitely is a lot of really remarkable work by Cuban-born artists who are living elsewhere. But it's hard to get Cuban art. And we got in on this little window. And so to have an entire body of work, an entire collection like this that is actually available, is pretty unique in the entire country. The pieces, too, are appreciating really quickly. In fact, there's one artist whose work went up by a half in comparable, we look up auction values for the better known artist, and between the time that we actually printed the price tag and the time that we mounted the exhibit, his value went up by another half, because there's this increasing awareness. There are museum exhibits happening. There's a little bit more opportunity for cultural institutions and educational institutions to bring work. But this is some of the only work that is available for sale, and it's gaining value. So it's a good investment.
Neither you nor I work for the State Department, and trying to predict international politics is a pretty dicey game. But do you feel like if the opportunity is there, that from the artist's standpoint, there is an openness to more exchanges like this?
I certainly hope so. I mean, we felt that, like I said, there was just this warmth and yeah, a real openness to exchange. I think that that can continue even under some embargo with, I hope, with the University of Missouri. There's the Afro-Cuban Institute is here. There is a great, strong connection between Columbia, Missouri, and Havana, like kind of little known. So I do think that that some exchange will continue, and as it opens up, I hope that it does. I think that there was something hopeful happening when we were there, and the door being closed may raise the value a little bit now, but that's a big trade for us, so we hope that it opens.
As we have just a few moments left in our program here, there had to have been some champions, some people that supported this project that made it possible for you. You mm-hmm. didn't just decide one morning, I'm going to jump on a plane and fly to Cuba.
Right. Yeah, you know, like I said earlier, part of our project here, the part of the mission of the gallery is more museum-like than, like, sales-oriented.
Right.
And because of that, we do actually have sponsors. So there's kind of this, like, hybridization that happens here. Max and Julie Lasinger are local folks who are big art collectors. They're individuals, and really just it's kind of a putting your money where your mouth is kind of thing. They wanted to support this exhibit in particular and helps us do that educational programming and that kind of that museum curation side of like the research and the preparation of the work that brings it really to the whole community and not just to like a select pocket of people who might be able to purchase the work. We really want it to be available to everyone. So, their sponsorship makes a difference in that. And actually, Max's mother passed away this past year, and there was this important opportunity for him to honor her and the way that she instilled in him and his siblings an appreciation of art by sponsoring the exhibit in her name. And that's actually, there's a slide on the on the marquee when you come in the door that kind of explains that. And it really is, it's a very sweet tribute, and it's very, very appreciated.
Somebody hearing this, interested in possibly investing in this or just finding out more about Sager Broadus, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
So I'm Hannah, H-A-N-N-A-H, at SagerBroadusGallery.com. And, this exhibit is only up through April 28th, through 6 p.m. on April 28th. So we hope that most of the people listening have been in, maybe get one little last chance to revisit. But if you're hearing this after the exhibit is down, it's important to me that you know that these are permanent collection pieces. So while they won't be on the walls of the main gallery after April 28th, they do remain available. And we have a storage space, so they will temporarily be in storage. We'll be able to rotate them out. But we can certainly pull them out for viewing should someone feel, oh my gosh, I can't believe I missed this, I'm hearing it like a couple days too late. We're available, and I'm the person to contact, and they'll remain around.
Again, the Sager Broadus Gallery, located on East Walnut in Columbia, and you can find them online at SagerBroadusGallery.com. It's been Thinking Out Loud from KBIA. Again, we have recorded this program before a live audience here at Sager Broadus Gallery with Hannah Reeves of Sager Broadus Gallery. Hannah, thank you to you. Thank you to our audience very much. It's been Thinking Out Loud on KBIA.
Thanks, Bob.